Well, today is known as Simchat Torah, rejoicing in the law. All week long we've heard the law being talked about, we've heard the law being discussed, we've heard the law being told what we're supposed to be doing, and now we're to think of the benefits of that law, how Yahweh's program is for us to reach out even more than what we are doing now. And with His blessing we can do that. We know that He will bless our efforts if we do it in love and compassion. Simchat Torah stands for the sum total of the many who will be saved, have salvation. Thank you. When this program of the first 1,000-year resurrection takes place, that it is then that we will see the real fruits. Now we see those who are struggling and, like me, stumbling our way to the kingdom. Sometimes we make mistakes, make errors, but Yahweh is forgiving. He's willing to do that. One of the ways He's forgiving is if we read what He told us through those in the Old Testament and how we are supposed to be learning from the mistakes they made. For example, in 1 Corinthians 10, verses both 6 and 11, you don't have to turn there. Basically, it says that the Old Testament, those people back there made mistakes and Yahweh corrected them. Now we're to follow what Yahshua did and not make the same mistakes. We often hear talks about the Ten Commandments and how beneficial they are. If everyone would keep the Ten Commandments, this world would be a paradise on earth right now. Today I'd like to talk to you about the Ten Rebellions. The Ten Rebellions that Israel brought against Yahweh's word. And as you probably guess, it didn't take very long. 6 weeks after they were given the word, they were at it right away. Well, let's turn to the book of Exodus, chapter 14. Chapter 13, as you might remember, is the crossing of the Red Sea. And the sea closed in and, of course, killed all the Egyptians. But notice here in this 14th chapter, we'll begin there with verse 9. We haven't got time to read everything, but notice here in verse 9 it says that Israel was being chased by the Egyptians. Sometimes the question comes up, how did Pharaoh have all those animals when the firstborn of animals and men and children were all killed? Well, apparently they had some in caves and some in barns and so on, so the curse didn't fall on them. But notice in verse 9 it says, "But the Egyptians pursued after them all the horses and chariots of Pharaoh and his horsemen and his army and overtook them, encamping at the sea beside Pihahiroth before Baal Zephon. And when Pharaoh drew nigh, the children of Israel lifted up their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians marched after them. And they cried out unto Yahweh. And they said unto Moses, Because there were no graves in Egypt, have you taken us away to die in the wilderness? Wherefore hast thou dealt with us to carry us forth out of Egypt? Is not this world, this word that you who did tell thee in Egypt, let us alone that we may serve the Egyptians, for it had been better for us to serve the Egyptians and we should die in the wilderness." Now instead of looking around and saying, Yahweh can deliver us again, but they began to chide with Moses, saying, "It's your fault, Moses. We didn't want to come out here. You're the one who brought us out. We're not happy out here. We want to go back." And you'll notice that Moses was the one who kept his cool. In verse 13, he said, "Don't worry. Keep your cool. Salvation is coming, and we will see it today. For you shall not see the Egyptians anymore after today. Yahweh will fight for you, and He shall hold your peace." Maybe they had a reason for being all upset. They had never really seen Yahweh's power working with other nations like they were going to see in the future. But the point is that this is their first rebellion. And notice how they actually said, didn't we say in Egypt, leave us alone that we may serve the Egyptians? They never said that. But they make it sound as if it's all Moses' fault. You talked us into it, Moses. Now here we are. What are we going to do? We're going to be all dead. You know that. Moses, oh, stand still. Don't run around. Don't get excited and run away. Yahweh will take care of it. So there we have the first one. And notice he says, Yahweh shall fight for you in verse 14, and you shall hold your peace. Well, without going into it, you know what happens. He takes care of the Egyptians, and that is the first rebellion. Let's go to the next one in chapter 15. In chapter 15, we'll begin there with verse 18. In verse 18, it says, Yahweh shall reign forever and ever. For the horses of Pharaoh went in with his chariots and with his horsemen into the sea. And Yahweh brought again the waters of the sea upon them, that the children of Israel went on dry land in the midst of the sea. And Miriam the prophetess, sister of Aaron, took a timbrel in her hand, and all the women went out after her with timbrels and dances. So they were real happy and glad. The sea closed in. The Egyptians all died. Chariots got mired in the mud and so on. Verse 21, Mary had answered them, Sing unto Yahweh, for he has triumphed gloriously. The horse and his rider has he thrown into the sea. So Moses brought Israel from the Red Sea, and they went out into the wilderness of Shur. And they went 3 days in the wilderness and found no water. Well, you can see another problem coming up right away. And they came to Marah. Marah means bitterness. And they could not drink of the waters of Marah, for they were bitter. Therefore the name of it was called Marah. And the people murmured against Moses. And he cried unto Yahweh, when they said, What shall we drink? And Yahweh showed him a tree which he had cast into the waters. The waters were made sweet. There he made for them a statute and an ordinance, and there he proved them. And he said, If you will diligently hearken unto the voice of Yahweh your Elohim, and give ear to his commandments, and keep all his statutes, I will put none of these diseases upon you which I have brought upon the Egyptians, for I am Yahweh that healeth thee. So here we get a clue that the Egyptians were suffering physical maladies. We don't really know about that until we read it here. But he says he will keep these away from Israel if they would but obey. Of course, they obey, but they grumble all the time. Grumbling Israelites. They grumble all the time, don't they? Don't we? Well, that's the second rebellion. Let's go to chapter 16. And notice there in verse 1. They took their journey from Elim, and all the congregation of the children of Israel came to the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month after their departing out of the land of the Egypt. 45 days after they left Egypt, here they are grumbling again. Notice in verse 2, The whole congregation of the children of Israel murmured against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. And the children of Israel said unto them, Yah, would to Elohim that we had died by the hand of Yahweh in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the flesh pots, and then we did eat bread to the full. You notice how when you look back at something, you kind of forget the worst part of it, and you remember sometimes the best part? But these people are bitter. And notice they look back and they say, oh, we ate to the full. I don't know of any place that they actually had more than they wanted to eat. This is what they're saying. You brought us forth in the wilderness to kill the whole assembly. We're all going to die. It's all your fault, Moses. You're the one that instigated this. You started it. It's your fault. So, notice here they say that Moses was going to kill the entire assembly. How do you think Moses feels? First of all, he didn't want to lead the children of Israel out of Egypt. he was told to do it, that he would have help with it. His brother, Aaron, would be the spokesman. And so now he's got all these grumbling Israelites. Every little time they have a problem, they start grumbling and blame Moses. Well, verse 4, Yahweh said to Moses, "Behold, I will rain bread from heaven for you, and the people shall go out and gather a certain rate every day, that I may prove them whether they will walk in my law or not. And it shall come to pass that on the sixth day they shall prepare that which they bring in, and it shall be twice as much as they gather daily." And Moses and Aaron said to all the children of Israel, "At even then you shall know that Yahweh has brought you out of the land of Egypt, and in the morning you shall see the glory of Yahweh. For he hears your murmurings against Yahweh. And what are we that you murmur against us?" Moses says, "Aaron and I are just doing what Yahweh told us to do. Yet we get the blame." And tells the people, "You're not supposed to murmur at all, not even against us." Verse 8, "And Moses said, This shall be when Yahweh gives you the evening flesh to eat, and the morning bread to the full, for that Yahweh hears your murmurings that you murmur against him. And what are we? Your murmurings are not against us, but they're against Yahweh." Well, Moses spoke to them and he tried to convince them. But you'll notice that the Israelites like to grumble a lot, and they do more than their share. Let's see, I don't want to read all this. But the point is that in the verse 12, it talks about the quails that are going to be coming in every afternoon, and they can kill the quails and eat them. Because when they get the manna, they get tired of it. So he gives them, they want flesh to eat. So he gives it to them. And sometimes they find out that some of those people actually died. But I don't want to get into that. Got to be moving on here. We have to go to rebellion number 4. And here we have in number 4, beginning with the book of Exodus, chapter 16. And let's start in there with verse 10, telling about the glory that they saw. "Behold, the glory of Yahweh appeared in the cloud. Yahweh spoke to Moses, saying, I have heard the murmurings of the children of Israel. Speak unto them at even," actually between the evenings, "at even you shall eat flesh, and in the morning you shall be filled with bread. You shall know that I am Yahweh, your Elohim. And if it come to pass that even the quails come up," and it came to pass, I should say, "at evening the quails came up and covered the camp, and in the morning dew laid round about the host." So they had manna and quail. And they had that for 40 years. And they still grumbled. And they grumbled because they got tired of it. They got tired of eating this all the time. Well, anyway, let's move on. Verse 14 says, "When the dew that was that they lay on was gone, behold, upon the face of the wilderness there lay a small round thing, as small as little hoarfrost on the ground. And when they saw it, of course, they didn't know what it was. They asked what it was." Manna, what's that? Verse 16, "This is a thing that Yahweh has commanded. Gather of it every man according to his eating, and omer for every man according to the number of your persons. You take you every man for them that are in his tents." So an omer is about the size of a quart jar, something like that. They were to get that every day for 6 days. And on the last day, on Friday, they were to get twice as much. But if they tried to keep it, why, it wouldn't last. So here in verse 19, we read, "Moses said, Let no man leave any of this until the morning. Notwithstanding," verse 20, "they hearkened not unto Moses, and some of them left it until the morning. It bred worms and stank, and Moses was angry with them." In fact, they gathered every morning according to the eating, and when the sun was grown hot, then all the manna melted. Verse 22, It came to pass that on the sixth day they gathered twice as much bread, 2 omers for every man. And all the rulers of the congregation came and told Moses. And he said, this is right. You're supposed to do that. So already they're getting an inclination that the Sabbath is a special day. But notice about this manna, it's kind of interesting. Verse 23, this is that which Yahweh spake or said, tomorrow the rest of the holy Sabbath unto Yahweh, that which you can bake that day, and see that you will see that none that which remains over lay up for you to be kept until the morning. So every Friday they knew the Sabbath was coming. They could get twice as much. If they kept tried to get twice as much on another day, it would breed worms and stink, so they couldn't use it. Now notice here in chapter 16, in verse 26, it says, 6 days you shall gather it, but on the seventh day, which is the Sabbath, in it there shall be none. So now we go into verse 27, rebellion number 5. And it came to pass, there went out some of the people on the seventh day for to gather, and they found none. On the Sabbath, they still went out trying to find, probably didn't get theirs on Friday like they should have, but they went out on the Sabbath trying to find it. And you find that Yahweh said to Moses, how long do you refuse to keep my commandments, my laws? See that for Yahweh has given you the Sabbath, therefore he giveth you on the sixth day the bread of 2 days. Abide you every man in his place, let no man go out of his place on the seventh day. They weren't supposed to spend their time running around trying to find the manna. Neither were they supposed to go running around trying to find firewood. Supposed to do all these things ahead of time. So we find in verse 30, so the people rested on the seventh day. Now we'll go to chapter 17 and start with rebellion number 6. All the congregation of the children of Israel journeyed from the wilderness of Sin after their journeys according to the Rephidim, or commandment of Yahweh, and pitched in Rephidim, and there was no water in for the people to drink. Wherefore the people did chide with Moses and said, give us water that we may drink. And Moses said to them, why chide me or you with me? Wherefore do you tempt Yahweh by your complaining? And the people thirsted there for water. And the people murmured against Moses and said, wherefore is it that you have brought us out of Egypt to kill us and our children and our cattle? Always complaining, always blaming Moses, always thinking it's his fault. You would think that they'd kind of settle down and say, well, wait a minute, Yahweh has settled all of our problems before. Why can't we wait and see what he has in mind for us? Even though we're thirsty, we know that he can do about anything he wants. And if we ask him in a nice way, that he'll probably give it to us. Instead of that, they attack Moses. It's all your fault, Moses. You brought us out here. You want us dead. What's the matter, you dummy? What do you think we're supposed to do out here in this hot desert? I have to admit, Moses probably had the patience of Job. I mean, to put up with all this stuff. It goes on and on and on and on. One time they're about to kill him. So in verse 4, Moses cried to Yahweh, saying, what will I do about these people? What will I do with these people? They almost ready to stone me. And Yahweh said to Moses, go on before the people, take with you the elders of Israel and your rod wherewith you smote the river, and take it in your hand and go. Behold, I will stand before you there upon the rock in Horeb, and there you shall smite the rock, and there shall come water out of the rock, that the people may drink. And Moses did so in the sight of the elders of Israel. So that actually took place that way. It's rather interesting that you'll notice here he used to smite the rock. Later on he was told to talk to the rock. Instead he smote it again. And the reason most scholars believe he did that is because he was so frustrated and angry with these Israelites always complaining and blaming him, he just took his rod and he smashed it on the rock. And as a result, he never got in the promised land. A lot of people think, oh, I can kind of bend Yahweh's laws a little bit. I don't have to keep the Sabbath like that. I can do some other things and break the Sabbath. And he's the loving Heavenly Father. He'll forgive me. He didn't forgive Moses. Didn't forgive Eve either when she took of the forbidden fruit. You take of that fruit and you're going to die. She did. Well, let's move on here. We're getting into, that was rebellion number 6. Number 7, that takes place in chapter 32. Let's move over there. In these next verses, chapters 18, 19, 20, and so on, they primarily are Yahweh's giving the law, because Israel never really had the law written down. But in these chapters here, especially in chapter 20, we read about Israel being given the Ten Commandments in stone. And some people think they were great big things like, about 10 feet high like we have back in Kingdom City. Actually, it says that Moses could carry them in his hand, so Charlton Heston could have had both of those tablets in his hand. So it's rather interesting. I don't want to look all these things up, but kind of a little aside. Well, let's go over to the seventh one here in chapter 32. And here we find one of the greater mistakes of Israel. They're given the Ten Commandments. They're given everything. They ratify the contract they made with Yahweh in the 24th chapter of Exodus. Now, in chapter 32, Moses is supposed to go up and meet with Yahweh. If you want to go down to chapter 31, I want to just touch on verse 13. Verse 13, Yahweh again emphasizes the Sabbath. He takes special time here to say in verse 13, to speak unto the children of Israel, saying, verify my Sabbath, verily my Sabbath you shall keep, for they are a sign between me and you throughout your generations, that they may know that I am Yahweh, that does sanctify you. Rather interesting here, it says the Sabbath are a sign. And we find here that keeping the Sabbath apparently is a sign, and yet Yahweh's name is a seal. So the sign and the seal are that Sabbath and the name. And one's the third commandment, one's the fourth commandment. Two commandments, back to back. And these are the ones that we find most of the people ignore in our world today, don't they? Anyway, Yahweh gives a command here. Verse 14, you shall keep the Sabbath, therefore, for it is holy unto you. Everyone that defiles it shall surely be put to death. For whosoever does any work therein, that soul shall be cut off from among the people. 6 days may work be done, but in the seventh is the Sabbath of rest, holy to Yahweh. Wherefore does any whosoever does any work in the Sabbath day shall surely be put to death. Wherefore the children of Israel shall keep the Sabbath to observe the Sabbath throughout your generations for a perpetual covenant. So keeping the Sabbath, not only the weekly Sabbath, but I believe the holy days of the year, the 7 annual Sabbaths, is a covenant we make with Yahweh when we keep these days. And if our rewards don't come in this life, we know they'll come in the kingdom. But notice here, in verse 18 it says, he gave unto Moses, when he had made an end of communing with him on the mount, 2 tables of testimony, tables of stone written with the finger of Elohim. Now in chapter 32, this isn't even 40 days after they came out of Egypt. And you'll notice here, we have the seventh rebellion. So here we have to take a look at this. Moses is up talking to Yahweh. He's giving the law to Moses. He already has it written down. He has it, you know, he probably etched it in stone, the Ten Commandments. But the rest of those things Moses had to write down. So in chapter 32, he's gone for a while. And it says, when the people saw that Moses didn't come down right away, they gathered themselves together unto Aaron and said unto him, make us deities which shall go before us. As for Moses, the man that brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we don't know what's become of him. And now Aaron should know better, you would think. Aaron is his brother, older brother. Aaron said unto the people, break off the golden earrings which are in your ears, in the ears of your wives and your sons and your daughters, and bring them to me. And the people broke off the golden earrings which were in their ears and brought them to Aaron. He took them from them, received them at their hand. And then you'll notice it says he fashioned with them a graving tool after he had made the made it molten, and he made the calf. And they said, notice it's the people that said, Aaron didn't say this. Aaron did it. And the people said, these be your Elohim, O Israel, which brought you out of the land of Egypt. So the people themselves turned against this. You can't blame Aaron for saying that this golden calf was their deity. But he does do something else. Notice in verse 5, when Aaron saw it, he built an altar before it. And Aaron made proclamations and said, tomorrow is the feast of Yahweh. He made his own feast. Trying to please the people, trying to be a good Joe and do what they want. Moses had more backbone than Aaron. Moses said, no, you won't do it that way. Yahweh said, do it the other way. Worship me. Don't go building a bunch of altars just to keep the people happy. Notice in verse 6, they rose up early in the morrow and offered burnt offerings and brought peace offerings, and the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. This is an interesting observation to make here. Here the people are taking the things that Yahweh said he wants given to him, peace offerings, burnt offerings, and instead of that they give it to the golden calf. Now generally what they have been doing is taking pagan ideas and pagan symbols, pagan customs, and using those to worship Yahweh, picking out days like Easter, Christmas, and so on. But this is a little bit different. They do it both ways. They're just bent on going into paganism. And I know you've been hearing a lot about keeping the law, but when you read what happened to ancient Israel and how easy it is to slip into worshiping false doctrines and false deities and doing things wrong and not following what Yahweh wants you to do. Notice in verse 7, Moses is still talking to Yahweh up on the mount. And he says, go, get you down for thy people. Notice he does not say, my people. They're your people, Moses. He gets both barrels, both from Yahweh and from the people. You brought them out of the land of Egypt, and they have corrupted themselves. They have turned aside quickly out of the way which I commanded them. They have made them a molten calf, and have worshipped it, and have sacrificed thereunto. These be thy deities, O Israel, which have brought thee up out of the land of Egypt. And Yahweh said to Moses, I have seen these people, and behold, it is a stiff-necked people. You know, if you're on the right track and you have truth, nothing wrong with being stiff-necked and not wanting to change from it. But if you get off on the wrong track and you won't come back and do things right, Yahweh's got a problem with you, because he wants you to stay on the narrow way and not be wandering off into the little bunny trails around the right path. Notice in verse 10, Yahweh tells Moses, now therefore let me alone, that my wrath may wax hot against them, and that I may consume them, and I will make of you a great nation. And Moses besought Yahweh his Elohim, and said, Yahweh, why does thy wrath wax hot against your people, which you have brought out of the land of Egypt with great power and a mighty hand? Wherefore should the Egyptians speak and say, for mischief he did bring out his people to slay them in the mountains, consume them from the face of the earth. Turn from your fierce wrath and repent of this evil against your people. So Moses pleads for his people, even though they were dead wrong in what they were doing. But he wants to give them an opportunity. Verse 13, remember Abraham, Isaac, and Israel. Notice he doesn't say Jacob. He's talking about the spiritual aspect of the whole situation, how they've turned their back on him. He says, remember Abraham, Isaac, and Israel. They were all servants to Yahweh, to whom you swear by yourself, by your own self, and said unto them, I will multiply your seed as the stars of heaven. And all this land I have spoken of will I give unto you and your seed, and they shall inherit it forever. Of course, it didn't happen, did it? Israel was taken out of the north parts and Judah taken out and sent to Babylon. And it just doesn't happen. When we read things like this and we see that Israel just couldn't get it. Couldn't get it right, no matter what they did. They kept fumbling around, wondering about if this isn't just as good. Can we try this? Can we do it this way? Do we have to be on the Sabbath? Can we start the Sabbath on Sunday like the rest of them? You know, it goes on and on and on. There's no end to it. And in verse 15, Moses turned and went down from the mount, and the two tables of the testimony were in his hand. So he carried them down with one hand, not like Charlton Heston and those big tables of Ten Commandments. And they were written on the one side, and on the other were they written. Verse 16, the tables were the work of Elohim, and the writing was the writing of Elohim, graven in stone on the tables. Yahweh himself wrote the Ten Commandments and gave it to Moses. Notice, Joshua comes down, hears the noise of the people, and he said, there's noise of war in the camp. Well, Yahweh's been talking to Moses. He knows what's going on. And he said, it is not the voice of them that shout for mastery, neither is it the voice of them that cry for being overcome, but is the noise of them that sing, do I hear? And it came to pass that as soon as he came into the camp that he saw the calf and the dancing, and Moses' anger waxed hot, grew hot, and he cast the tables out of his hand and broke them before or beneath the mount. Interesting how he broke those tables before he ever gave them to Israel. He broke them before they got them. And I've read in some Jewish accounts that some of the rabbis feel that this was out of love for the people. He broke the commandments so that Israel did not have the commandments there. That Moses broke them himself so that Israel could not be blamed for breaking the law if he had turned the commandments over to them. They didn't know all the commandments at that time. That's rather an interesting observation. But anyway, it says in verse 20 that he took the calf which they had made and burnt it in the fire and ground it to powder and strawed it upon the water and made the children of Israel drink it. And Moses said to Aaron, What did this people unto you? What did they do unto you that you have brought so great sin upon them? Notice what Aaron says in verse 22. Let not the anger of the people wax hot. You know the people, that they are set on mischief. It's not my fault, Aaron. You know how people are. They're like little kids. They want to play with a lot of stuff. And I let them because I want to keep them happy. You were gone. You were gone a long time. So I did what I could, Moses. And they said, make unto us deities which will go before us, verse 23. As for this Moses, this man that brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we don't know what's become of him. And I said unto them, Aaron says, whosoever has any gold, let them break it off. So they gave it to me, and I cast it into the fire, and there came out this calf. That's an outright lie, isn't it? He threw it in the fire, and this calf come out? Sure is. Aaron had his hand in there. He was making that calf. He might have been an artisan of some kind. Verse 25, when Moses saw that the people were naked. Now that tells us a little more about what kind of party this was. This was a real party, and that was really upset. Upsetting to Yahweh, upsetting to Moses, and Aaron didn't really say much. But it says Aaron had made them naked unto their shame among their enemies. So they had a real sex party going on down here. And that's what really angered Yahweh. One of the few times you really find out about this, as Elder Scott's been talking about so many times, adultery and so on, actually fornication is really referring to wrong worship. But this one, of course, combined both. They had a golden calf they were worshiping, and they kept a day that was not given to them by Yahweh and worshiped that. So that this is one of the worst, I believe, of all that Israel ever committed. And they did it within just a short time after they'd gotten out of the land of Egypt. And they saw these miracles, and they had the manna, and they had the quails coming in. They saw the sea part. They saw the Egyptians being buried and water out of the rock. And still, they still didn't get it. Well, notice here that as you move on down, verse 31, Moses returned unto Yahweh and said, Oh, this people have sinned a great sin and have made them deities of gold. Yet now, if you will forgive their sin, and if not, blot me out, I pray, out of the book of life, or the book which you have written. Moses is willing to die for his people, isn't he? He said, blot my name out. Of course, Yahweh had another idea, had somebody else who was going to do that. And Yahweh said unto Moses in verse 33, Whosoever has sinned against me, him will I blot out of the book. Therefore, now go and lead the people into the place that I have spoken unto you. Behold, mine angel shall go before you. Nevertheless, in the day that I visit, I will visit their sin upon them. And Yahweh plagued the people because they made the calf which Aaron had made. I kind of skipped over something back here that I really should get back to, and that's in the 32nd chapter. And move on down there to verse 12. It's an interesting observation. Verse 12, Moses has just been told that he is going to be the one that Yahweh will start with him and start a whole new group of people. He'll forget Israel, do away with them all, and start over with Moses. In verse 12 he says, Wherefore, Moses said, should the Egyptians speak and say, For mischief did he bring them out to slay them in the mountains and to consume them from the face of the earth. Turn from your fierce wrath and repent of this evil against thy people. Remember Abraham, Isaac, and Israel. And he says, Which thou swearest by thine own self, and said to them, I will multiply your seed as the stars of heaven, and this land I have spoken of will I give to your seed, and they shall inherit it forever. Verse 14 says, Yahweh repented of the evil. Sometimes we read in the Bible that Yahweh does not repent. And people have taken this as an argument. Well, let me ask you this. Did Yahweh say he was going to kill off the people? So this is what he said. I'm going to start over with you, Moses. But he did make one change. That he did keep the one where he said they'd all die off, and they all did. All those 20 years of age and over that had been taken part in this big party and so on. But when it came to crossing over the Jordan River to go into the Promised Land, Moses could not lead them into the Promised Land. What does that tell us? Keeping the law alone will not get you into the kingdom. You have to have a little more than that. Obedience has to be from the heart, and it's done through Yahshua, the one who paid the price already for our sins. So Moses could see the land. Yahweh allowed him that, but he could not go into the promised land. Well, there's some more we could say on that, but let's go on to another one. We're here with rebellion number 7. Let's move on to Numbers chapter 11. Leviticus is in between there because Leviticus goes into the law that Moses primarily wrote down. And so that is in between there, between Numbers and Exodus. But notice in Numbers chapter 11, excuse me, beginning with verse 1, here we are in rebellion number 8. When the people complained, it displeased Yahweh, and Yahweh heard it, and his anger was kindled, and the fire of Yahweh burnt among them, and consumed them that were in the uttermost part of the camp. And the people cried unto Moses, and Moses prayed unto Yahweh, the fire was quenched. And he called the name of the place that burnt among them. I didn't really go back and cover that. But it was primarily because of their rebellion again. And Moses prayed and the fire was stopped. But I want to move on to the next one right here, which is in verse 4. And this is rebellion number 8. Notice it says in verse 4 that the mixed multitude that was among them fell a-lusting. And the children of Israel wept again and said, "Who will give us flesh to eat? We remember the fish that we did eat and the melons and the leeks and the onions and the garlic. Now our soul is dried away. There is nothing in at all left but this manna before our eyes." All we see is manna, manna, manna. Manna here, manna there, every place manna. That's all we get to eat is manna. We get tired of it. But notice an interesting observation in verse 4. It was the mixed multitude that gave the problem. It wasn't Israel. But notice what they were saying. First of all, they talked about the fish, which would be in the water. But notice it was the cucumbers. And like I mentioned before, cucumbers grow on the ground. They were looking on the ground for stuff. Cucumbers and melons. And they were looking for leeks and onions and garlic. All that comes from the ground. They weren't looking up for the trees. They weren't looking up for Yahweh. Looking for the dates and for the figs and things like that. They had their attention riveted to the ground instead of being uplifted higher up in Yahweh. So we have there the rebellion number 8. Anyway, Yahweh gets a little angry because they say our soul is, when verse 6, chapter 11, verse 6, our soul is dried away. There is nothing at all besides this manna before our eyes. It's monotonous. He describes this in verse 7 and says it was the color of a coriander seed and the color of bdellium, whatever that is, kind of a light tan, I'm told. And the people went about and gathered it and ground it in mills and beat it in mortar and baked it in pans, made cakes, and tasted like fresh oil. So they go on to explain that, but basically the people were never really happy, always finding fault with something and always trying to see what else they could do. So this was rebellion number 9 when they complained about the manna, always having manna. Let's go on to Numbers 14. In Numbers 14 we have the final rebellion. And you'll notice it begins here in it actually begins in chapter 13. I want to go back there again. Chapter 13. And begin there with verse 4. It talks about the names of the tribes of Israel. And they were to go over and spy out the land. And it gives the various leaders of the various tribes. What is interesting here is that we have in verse 6 of the tribe of Judah was Caleb, the son of Jephunneh. In verse 8 we have the tribe of Ephraim, which is Hoshea. And it is here that we find that they are the ones that said the land was good. We ought to take advantage of it. Yahweh says, go in and take it. Let's do it. The rest of them said, no, they're too big people. They're giants, and we're like grasshoppers. We don't want to go there. We'll have too hard a time. We'll all die probably. They'll kill us all. Well, they were supposed to cross over, and they didn't do it. But it's interesting, again, that Judah and Ephraim are the ones that are mentioned even in the book of in the New Testament about being the ones to go back and take over the land in Israel and be the ones that of course, Ephraim stands for the northern 10 tribes and Judah for the two tribes that are presently there now. But notice here too in verse 16, it says, these are the names of the men which Moses sent to spy out the land. And Moses called Hoshea, the son of Nun, Jehoshua. And I remember that Brother Jose was, we were talking about this, Numbers 13:16. That's when Hosea's name was changed from Hoshea, to Joshua. And actually, I remember we had a number of years ago, about 20 years ago, we had an exchange student from Israel when we were living in Casper, Wyoming. And he came there and spent some time with us. And I remember we were talking about this, and I said, it's in the book of Hosea. And he said, Hosea. He said, you know, there are two of them that are alike. He said, one of them is after the book of Deuteronomy, and the other one's Hosea and Hoshea, as he called them. Anyway, we were talking about the sacred name back in those days with him too, and I remember he brought out the fact that the Jews probably used J-A, did not use the J-A in those days either. They don't say Yahshua, they say Yeshua even today. And that is why here it says Jeshua. Anyway, the book of Daniel is followed by Hosea, and of course in Deuteronomy you have the book of Joshua. Anyway, this Jewish man said that they both sound very much alike, and I forgot how he determined one was different from the other, how they could tell them apart. Anyway, the thing I wanted to mention too, that the problem with Israel began in earnest when Moses was up in the mount. And the interesting point there is that when Moses came down, he was a lot different than when he went up. Turn with me to the book of Exodus again. Exodus, back to 34, chapter 34. When Moses came down from the mount, it was actually quite a bit different. In move on down to, let's see, Exodus 34, and I think it's about verse 28, there it is. Moses was there 40 days and 40 nights in the mount. And notice here, he did neither eat bread nor drink water. And he wrote upon the tables the words of the covenant, the Ten Commandments. one of the few places you find that the Ten Commandments up and by themselves are the covenant. If you keep them, you are keeping the covenant. Verse 29 says, it came to pass when Moses came down from the mount with the two tables of stone, or two tables of the testimony, in Moses' hand, which he came down from the mount, that Moses knew not that the skin of his face shone while he talked with him. In 2 Corinthians 3:7, Paul refers to this. But notice what happens. When Aaron and all the children of Israel saw Moses, that the skin of his face shone, they were afraid to come near to him. And Moses called unto them, and Aaron and all the rulers of the congregation turned unto him, and Moses talked with them. And afterwards all the children of Israel came near, and he gave them in commandment all that Yahweh had spoken with him in Mount Sinai. And until Moses had done speaking with them, he put a veil on his face. But when Moses went before Yahweh to speak with him, he took the veil away. And he came out, when he came out and spoke to the children of Israel, then he would put it on. Have you ever thought, brethren, when we get together like this at a Feast of Tabernacles especially, it's a mountaintop experience, much like what Moses went through here? Moses communed with Yahweh 40 days and 40 nights. And I imagine when he talked with Yahweh, that's all he talked about. His mind didn't have any carnal thoughts in there at all, nothing at all except Yahweh's word and his holiness, his righteousness, and actually his face shone. A lot of people understand the Holy Spirit as a bright, blinding light. Yahshua himself, you know, in the book of Revelation, chapter 1, beginning of verse 10, talks about his face shined like the noonday sun, hair was white as wool, ankles and feet of burnished brass. And now we are on the mountaintop. We're coming down. We're coming down into the place where the fruit is grown. You don't grow fruit up on a mountain. You grow it down in the valley. You grow it down there where your feet get dirty. And remember that if you have dirty feet, I still believe there's an analogy there, that we have to keep things clean. And I do believe that when we think about it, Yahshua is the one who washed the feet of his people. We have to have Yahshua's word in our heart and mind so we understand why we are different than the Old Testament. We are using the ideas, and not the ideas, but the doctrines that Yahshua gave us, and that Paul and Peter and John and so on all wrote down for us. And that is what we are doing, because it's in the valley where we get down to the nitty-gritty of living, being an example, having people talk to us about Yahweh's name. And the reason that we have to get back together to get again periodically is to kind of get refurbished again, get all jacked up and ready to go, because we know that the time, one of these days, it's going to be the last time we have together. I don't think this will be the last one, but one of these days it could happen. So we're this mountaintop experience, we're much like Moses. We go down and we have great ideas. We think that we're going to do a lot of things. We have a whole attitude now that's different. But little by little, it's chipped away. Satan takes it. I remember Brother Alamansi mentioned that he had gone at Passover. He was going home. He wanted to get on the airplane, and he was holding a lot of baggage and stuff, and he wanted to get it on there, and he asked the customer in front if he could get in front. He said, no way. Boy, I realized in a hurry I wasn't anymore with the people. I was out in the world again. We're going to find that same thing true now when we go back home again. It's not going to be easy. It's not going to be hard. It's going to be hard to contain yourself sometimes, and maybe we feel sometimes like the people that Moses had to reckon with. We get frustrated. We take it out on something else, on somebody else, and don't realize that we have to exercise patience and be calm and bite our tongue, grit our teeth, and carry on. But I do think that Yahweh has given us these examples that we're not to be like Israel did and continually grumble, find fault, and look around to see what we can pick on and take apart and in some way devalue the people that we know and give them ideas of not joy and happiness, but looking for something that could be wrong with something, or maybe there's somewhere else we could do better, whatever it is. We have to be positive, and I do believe Yahweh's Spirit is with us. Our face may not shine when we go down from the mountain, but I do believe that Yahweh's Spirit is with us. And we have to nurture His Spirit, keep it alive, and do the things Yahweh wants us to do in spite of what we have to put up with. Life is not fair. Nobody said it was. But life is what we have to live with. And we hope and pray that this meeting, that these meetings that we're having here, has helped you to become more dedicated, more willing to take whatever comes your way, knowing that Yahweh is with us.